I'm Brooke Green, and I work at Drescher Physical Therapy in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania, and I'm a pelvic floor specialist. I treat men and women with any kind of pelvic floor dysfunction, be it bowel or bladder issues, not making it to the bathroom, incontinence with bowel or bladder, sexual dysfunction, issues with erectile dysfunction or pain with intercourse with women, and then constipation, abdominal pain. Sometimes we're the ones that also solve some tricky, unresolving low back pain or SI joint dysfunction issues that aren't responding to the typical orthopedic physical therapy we all tend to think of when we think of physical therapy.
Do you call yourself a physiotherapist?
We see that more across the pond, but we usually say physical therapist. But okay. Yes, we're all trained as physical therapists. We go through PT school and take all the same material, take our boards, and then if you decide you want to specialize in pelvic health, then you need to take extra coursework beyond that, because typically they aren't teaching you too much in school.
That's like a 7-year program, if not more, right?
Yes.
Wow. Very impressive. Talking with Brooke Green today about pelvic health, and how do you know, first of all, if a pelvis is healthy?
There are a few red flags if you are leaking, if you have any type of incontinence where you don't make it to the bathroom, be it for a bowel movement or urination, if you can't empty your bladder or bowels. So I see a lot of patients with constipation or dysfunctional voiding, we call it, where they just have to strain to empty. I also treat a lot of patients with sexual issues, whether it's pain with intercourse or erectile dysfunction, or sometimes even just young women who or have a pelvic exam and they have too much pain. So we help them with that.
Are you usually able to resolve issues through therapy?
Yes. Yeah, it's very high success rate. Sometimes it takes a village, and we're helping patients who come in find a care team, whether they need a good urologist. Sometimes we recommend a little more testing just to make sure we're all on the same page. But typically, by the time they've come to see us, they've been through the whole rigmarole of testing and making sure there's nothing more serious contributing to their symptoms. And then we have great results.
A lot of people, even in this day and age, don't want to talk about it. And yet, you have to talk about it if you're going to resolve it.
Yes, there's certainly an art to that. I always say the hardest part is really getting in the door, because it is such a taboo subject across the generations. I think a lot of my patients come in and I hear that, well, I think my mom or my dad dealt with this, but they never talked about it. And a lot of people suffered in silence. Sometimes, too, things get brushed under the rug a little bit, where as women, if you've had a child, especially, that happens when you age. You might pee your pants a little bit. You had a kid. And that does not have to be something that we accept as we age.
That is so weird, though, because our society is opening up. I mean, even mainstream TV commercials are pretty dramatically real. People seem to be able to talk about so many things, but this is still a taboo subject. So do you find that you spend maybe the first session breaking through those barriers, or they're there to get something treated and they're ready to go?
Those depend. Sometimes people have some history of trauma or things like that, and we'll certainly take it very slowly, make sure someone is matched up with a great therapist if they need that, in addition to me, just to talk through things, because it's a lot to process depending on what you're coming in for. But then other people come in and they say, everyone's already seen everything. Do what you have to do. I'm ready. I'll do anything. Just tell me what I need to do.
Is hip pain the same as pelvic pain?
Not necessarily. They can be related. So the hip is kind of a vague area that sometimes even hip pain or the bee located in the hip could be coming from the back. Sometimes, you know, pelvic floor issues could be referring pain around the hip or the groin. So it's a little bit of a gray area, but, you know, as pelvic PTs, as I said, we are trained in the whole realm of physical therapy. We learn all the hip, back, everything, every part of the body. So if someone comes in to see me and they do have groin or hip-like pain somewhere vaguely in that region, we always do a back screen, a hip screen, then the pelvic floor screen, just to assess all those areas to make sure we really know where their pain is coming from.
In looking into pelvic PT and all of what you do, it was amazing how the literature talks about you really need, like, all these things are interconnected and you really need to strengthen that entire area below the belt. And we don't even think about that. We think of, you know, building our arms and our core, but we do have to pay attention to strengthening that area if we don't want problems.
Yes, with a couple caveats there is okay. that they sometimes we think, you know, Kegels, as people know, the pelvic floor muscle exercise as often are the answer to everything. But it really, really helps to see a physical therapist to know what category you fall into, whether you need the strengthening or you need to learn how to relax or a combination over time. It gets a little tricky because typically, you know, historically in those situations where someone has pain with intercourse or they have constipation, mm-hmm. oftentimes the pelvic floor muscles are too tense because there are little gatekeepers in their pelvis and they need to relax to let things in, you know, for intercourse or yeah. let things out for bowel and bladder movement. So that gets a little tricky sometimes.
When I do Pilates, one of the foundations of the first class that they tell you about is to do the pelvic curl. Does that have anything to do with what you do in terms of finding the pelvic floor and doing something like the pelvic curl?
Yeah, so that is interesting. There, without having a little anatomy model to show you, we often think of our abdominal muscles as our six-pack abs. Those are the abs we kind of think of. Maybe we think of the obliques a little bit. Oftentimes what we're not really aware of, unless we do Pilates, is our transverse abdominals. And those are part of the abs that Pilates really emphasizes, that sort of belly button to spine, the C curve, you know, all of mm-hmm. those things activate that part of your abdomen. And those abdominal muscles are supposed to co-contract with the pelvic floor. So again, it goes back to the value of a hands-on approach, being able to see if one, someone is activating those muscles correctly for the core in Pilates, or also doing a pelvic exam at the same time to see how someone's timing is. Are they co-contracting? Because it can go one way or the other. You could be just doing abs, you could be doing it incorrectly, but it kind of looks like you're doing it correctly unless someone really gets their hands on you, because it is such a very subtle muscle, or such a subtle muscle group, in terms of even those transverse abdominals. They're like our inner girdle, our corset. They're really deep inside our abdomen. And obviously the same goes with the pelvic floor. You can't really look at someone and just assume they are activating and tightening those muscles correctly, because we can't see them. It's not like a bicep curl. So that makes it a little complicated.
You mentioned people who leak during the day or when there is laughter or a cough or something like that. How do you respond to that? I mean, how do you treat that in PT?
So first thing when you come in, we do a really thorough health history. We want to look at what is making you leak. Is it when you sneeze or cough or laugh, which is a stress type of incontinence? And then we also look at urge type of incontinence. Do you leak on the way to the bathroom? You see the toilet, you're trying to get your key in the door, and the urge hits you like gangbusters and you can't get there in time. Those are two of the main types of incontinence. There's a couple of others, but we do a good thorough health history to see which ones are you experiencing? And then we address accordingly. We might have patients complete a bladder diary to see what their habits are. How often are you going? What are you drinking? Because on the occasion, you know, someone comes in, they drink two pots of coffee a day, and that's it. No water. And they're running to the bathroom every 20 minutes. And, you know, then we have the conversation about bladder irritants and things like that. Sometimes it's just the fact that as physical therapists, we get a whole hour to spend with these patients and really deep dive into lifestyle things as much as the physical part of it. Beyond that, we have certain strategies for each of those things. So stress type of incontinence, I want to teach you how to use your muscles or activate things correctly and manage pressures when you're jumping. Or if you have the urge type of incontinence, to get you to the bathroom in time, and then just usually involving maybe some overall strengthening if you don't fall in the relaxation category that we talked about earlier.
What about age? Does that area necessarily with age loosen up?
Not necessarily, believe it or not. A lot of times people think that's what's going to happen, but it's maybe more common, but not not always the norm. We can see it go either way. Sometimes postmenopause, things atrophy or shrink a little bit and become too tight, and women can fall in that category later in life where we need to help them learn how to relax things.
Do you use devices, as well as you mentioned exercises, but do you use devices to help loosen up that area below the belt?
Depending on what someone's comfortable with. I have people who come in and are willing to try just about anything, and then there are things that other people aren't as comfortable with. But yeah, we have things called vaginal dilators that you can have someone start using at home in between sessions. And those are great for like my younger patients who might be coming in because they want to be able to insert a tampon. That kind of gets into a deep dive of the brain pain connection. And I usually pull out this of them to show people how it's a nice graded progression in size. So if the goal is tampon, great. We start with the smallest one. But if the goal is I want to be able to have pain-free intercourse, we just gradually work up through these various sizes dilators until you're around roughly the size of your partner, mm-hmm. and it's pain-free. You get pain-free with one size, we go to the next one, and so on. And we learn how to stretch those muscles and relax them and basically try to calm down that response of muscle tension and guarding, because we know, you know, if something is hurt in the past, historically, we see it happening again, and we want to tense up because we're anticipating the pain. It's kind of like a gut reaction thing. You know, if you see somebody fall or touch something hot, you know, flinch for a second, and that tends to be the holding pattern that some people get into. So it's a really, the dilators are a really great tool to help people slowly progress and feel comfortable and confident with being able to have pain-free relations and not be as guarded with that and not go from 0 to 60.
I imagine you would see post-surgical patients as well.
Absolutely, yes.
What about guys? Do you see a lot of guy patients?
I do. I see a lot of pelvic pain, especially with everyone sitting a little more these days or working from home and having different work setups. Maybe they don't have their nice, normal, comfy office chair and they're sitting in a dining room chair and they develop some pelvic pain. Or I will also see men ideally pre-prostate removal if they have prostate cancer to prehab them, basically strengthen their pelvic floor going into surgery so they have the best outcome, because incontinence and leakage is a main complaint after having your prostate removed for that. Mm-hmm. So we can see them before to try to set them up for the most success, and then also afterwards. And then, of course, that might involve erectile dysfunction afterwards, and that's something we see otherwise as well, but just related strictly to the prostate. That's a common thing. But most of my male patients will be coming in for pelvic pain, prostate related issues, or constipation or abdominal pain.
Do they tend to see other doctors and other types of therapy before coming to you?
Not always. I would say some just come in and off the street, you know, did a little Google search. But oftentimes most men have seen a urologist first. If anything's sort of going on down there and the doctor doesn't really think to refer them to pelvic PT, they will usually say, well, let's have you see a urologist first. And then they end up at my door.
I was really interested in talking to you today because of the whole awareness issue. People just don't know about pelvic PT, and they're therefore be missing out on getting their problems solved, getting the word out, I guess.
Absolutely. I like to think it's growing. I mean, we all know how popular social media is these days, but there are a lot of pelvic floor physical therapists making videos on TikTok even, and certainly Instagram. And then, of course, just trying to get out and do the grassroots effort, get the doctors on board. I actually sadly see most of my patients come in just because they saw our newsletter or they saw something elsewhere, and then they Googled pelvic floor physical therapy near me and found me. Doctors do refer to, don't get me wrong, but a lot of it is clearly there is a growing awareness, but we're still not where we need to be. And I also like to usually mention that in countries like in Europe, it's a standard of care for women after they give birth to automatically be referred to a pelvic floor physical therapist. And that's, you know, recommended here. But I think a lot of what our society kind of focuses on is that if it's not broke, don't fix it. We don't have a huge preventative focus in healthcare right now. And women come to see me much later in life often and say, oh, I really wish I just knew about you after I gave birth. Yeah. You know, that's a whole different soapbox, but in general, you know, the awareness is growing, but it could be much better. So we're always trying to get the word out.
And here you are. I have to ask how you got into this line of work.
Yes, I get asked that by pretty much every new patient. So,
I bet.
When I was younger, starting out in my 20s, they would say, well, why do you do this? You can't have any issues. But as I've told you, it could be across a lifespan. So I was a bedwetter, and that's another thing we can treat as pelvic PTs. And so I wet the bed until I was far too old to be wetting the bed. And I would be the kid maybe peeing their pants on the way to the bathroom. And that's kind of what really got me into it. There was a woman who came to give us a lecture in PT school and talked all about pelvic floor physical therapy. And I was so intrigued, of course, because I wanted to fix some of my own problems.
Yes.
And I asked her after the lecture if I could come into her clinic just to observe a few times in my free time. And I saw, you know, how life-changing it was and what a difference it made in people's lives that have been suffering, you know, basically in silence for years until they found a resource. And I just immediately fell in love with it and knew it was what I wanted to do.
Your passion really comes through. I think so many young kids, oh, I don't know what I want to do. They should listen to stories like this because it can be just an ordinary day where something strikes you and changes your life like that.
Exactly.
So that's incredible. Anything that I didn't ask you about that you'd like to mention?
You know, the only other thing I think I didn't really touch on was I personally don't typically do pediatrics, but there are some people who just focus solely on pediatric pelvic floor physical therapy for the kids who, you know, have constipation or bedwetting and are leaking too. And sometimes it's grandmothers who come and say, oh, my grandson is still wetting the bed. Or, or one of my moms, oh, my daughter's still wetting the bed. And I'll say, oh, why don't you look into this? Check constipation is a major thing. And just telling one of my mom patients one day, talk to your doctor about constipation. Make sure she's drinking enough water. And her 11-year-old has been dry for months now. And, you know, it's just sometimes it's the littlest thing. So for patients, I always say, don't come in thinking you have to come 3 times a week for 8 weeks to get better. I mean, sometimes I only see patients for one visit and they just needed information. They just needed someone to really sit down with them, listen to their story, listen to their lifestyle habits and do an exam, give them the right tools. And it changes their life with just a visit.
So rewarding, Brooke.
It is. I have to say, it's a great, great profession.
Well, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time and increasing awareness for the world.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.